This is what I think could happen. There are many scenarios, Andy, but interest rates continue to rise. They hit 5% on the benchmark. We're not that far away. You get a sell-off, a precipitous sell-off in the stock market and in the housing market, really a frozen housing market really starts to get panicky. Then you get a sharp decline in GDP growth. And then the stock market really tumbles because you're not getting anywhere near your 14% growth.
Good morning, Michael Pentel. What's going on?
Hey, Andy, how you doing?
Jump right into it, right?
Yeah.
So,
that formal introduction. That was beautiful.
I'll tell you about that offline. A buddy of mine, we're talking the other day, and we were getting kind of nervous here because the bond yields are really spiking up here. Obviously, that means negative for the markets, but we've been thinking about this for 6 months now, really going on 6 months. I'm in that camp that we'd see a decent sell-off, and we really haven't yet. Yet we still see, it looks like, a slowing market here. Just want all your thoughts here going on that, because it can be confusing. It certainly seems very precarious.
Well, yeah. I mean, in the portfolio that I manage, the IDEC strategy, we went a little more bearish right at the end, like the tail end of December. And the reason is what you just mentioned. Spiking bond yields. In the face of the Fed's desire, you know, September 18th, I think was the meeting, the Fed cut interest rates, panicked by 50 basis points. Remember, they had to adjust policy because rates were too high, but they don't control long-term interest rates directly, only indirectly. That's if they're doing if they're doing some kind of massive QE program, which they're not doing right now. They're doing quantitative tightening. They're actually selling bonds. They control the overnight interbank lending rate, Fed funds rate, which competes with money markets, competes with T-bills. So they could take that rate down if they want to, and they are, although I think they've stopped now, right? They're kind of like in cement, if you ask me. They can't really cut interest rates much more when inflation has been above their asinine, as I'm enamored to say, their asinine 2% target. Because I say asinine because it should be zero, right? Stable prices in my mind, stable prices mean zero, no inflation, and that should be especially true, Andy, when inflation is up 40-50% since COVID, just a few years ago. So it's the level of prices that needs to come down. So 0% would be okay, I guess, better than 3. But any increase in inflation in the first derivative is horrible for the bottom four quintiles. So that the rate of change of inflation, the second derivative, the rate of change is actually accelerating further away from their asinine 2% target, which has been above 2% for 44 months. Right? They say they want 2% inflation. They've missed it to the upside for 44 months, right? And yet they're still talking about maybe one rate cut in October of 2025. So, but while they're cutting short-term rates, long-term rates are spiking. And that's really bad for an economy that is oversaturated in debt. Credit card debt, mortgage debt, state and local debt, national debt. As a matter of fact, if you look at total non-financial debt as a percentage of GDP, it has never been higher. So spiking rates aren't good for a frozen housing market, and they're not good for an economy that is debt disabled.
Right.
And that is why, Andy, I took down when I saw interest rates spiking. When the Fed cuts interest rates by 100 basis points, it's very unusual for long-term rates to rise. They should go down a little bit, but not as fast as short-term interest rates, which means you have a normally sloped yield curve and everybody's happy because nominal interest rates are falling across the yield curve. It's not happening this time. What's happening is short-term rates are coming down on the Fed funds rate, but yields are rising across the yield curve. It's not good news for a stock market that is the most expensive in history. If you look at things like earnings yields, if you look at that risk premium, so the earnings yield minus treasuries, it's negative. It's very unusual and getting worse because rates are rising.
Right. Okay. So I've got a question here, and I guess maybe a little bit of curveball, but not curveball to you, but it's to both of us because I've been gnawing on this. And I say this politically agnostic, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So Trump is coming in with, I guess, where he's cutting taxes, right?
No.
No, you don't think so?
No, I don't think he's cutting taxes. I think I think at best he's going to keep the Trump tax cuts in place, which is a rate of change of zero. So if he extends the Trump tax cuts in December, they're supposed to expire, which would be a huge $4 trillion tax hike. I don't think that happens. I think he gets it done where he can extend the tax cuts that were in place. But you're not going to see any tax cuts, right? Maybe you'll see an increase in the SALT tax deduction. Mm-hmm. Maybe. But on the other side of that, you're going to see increase in tariffs, which are taxes. So I am not convinced that you're going to see some massive tax cut. I think you're going to see probably at best an extension of the current tax policy, which expires in December of 2025.
Okay, so let's take that theory and let's say, for the sake of this conversation, I agree with you. But then you're going to have a lot of deregulation, which would be pro-business, correct?
Correct.
So you have this force here of deregulation, but yet you have, let's say, as you just said, we'll call it a neutral because of the tax cuts stay the same, the Trump tax cuts maintain in place. And then you have raising interest rates. So you have on one side, the force of the bond market, if you would, which is negative, rising interest, negative for stocks, hit deregulation, very good for the economy. And it seems like those forces are hitting. What's going to give? That's really my question.
So, you know, you don't have to always have, you know, come on Andy Millett's show and say, I'm making a big call, the market's going to crash, or the market soar because the growth is going to, you know, sometimes, you know, here's how I come down on it. And just to expound on your point. So I love the deregulation as a libertarian. I love the deregulation. Lower taxes. It's wonderful. On the other side of that, countervailing that is half of GDP growth is the increase in the labor force. And we could see significant deportations, and at the very least, we're gonna shut down the border.
Yeah.
So I think GDP growth could be in trouble. And then on the other side of that too, you have, like I said, the tax cuts get extended, but then countervailing that would be, so you have the deportations and you have tariffs, which are tax increases.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you put it all together and it comes out to me that says, okay, you should have decent growth, not a collapse yet in the economy, certainly not growth that's booming, certainly not 14% earnings growth that's predicted for the S&P 500 this year, on top of a very, very expensive stock market, on top of rates that are rising in spite of what the Fed is doing. So you put it all together, and I am slightly long the stock market now. I was coming into, so in 2024, I had about 50%. Especially towards the end of the year, after the Trump election, I was 60% net long the stock market. And I took that down to only 15 to 20% long right now. Just because I would just mention the untenuous nature, or not untenuous, the unstable and tenuous nature of the Treasury complex. You know, I look at it this way. You have three things going against you in the Treasury complex. You have inflation, insolvency, and illiquidity. Those are the three I's. Okay. So the liquidity for the T-bill, all the debt is financed. Thank you, Janet Yellen, at the very short end of the yield curve, the T-bill market. Well, that was wonderful because you had $2.3 trillion in the reverse repo facility, which is now $100 billion in the reverse repo facility. This is all the excess money that was created by COVID stimulus. It ended up as excess reserves, and then the Fed, you know, sold treasuries and soaked up those reserves. And those reserves now are gone. They went back out of the reverse repo facility and went into the T-bill market. So you had kind of quiescence in the treasury complex. There's a lot of illiquidity there now because that facility is almost done. It's for all intents and purposes, it is gone. That's why you're seeing the rates starting to rise. And then you add to that the fact that inflation is still rising. If you look at Michigan consumer confidence, inflation is actually much higher. It jumped from 2.8 to 3.3% inflation expectations. If you look at the ISM services sector, which is the largest part of the economy, prices paid jumped, I think, to 64.3, if I can remember, 64 point something, whatever. But it was much higher from where it was the month ago. So inflation expectations are rising. That doesn't sound like an environment where the Fed should be cutting interest rates, does it, Andy? Not really. Not the way I think of things. So you have inflation, you got illiquidity, and you have insolvency. You have insolvency. We have an insolvent nation. If you look at the nation's assets minus all of their liabilities, insolvent. And then you have and that means you have massive issuance of treasuries. So those three things together mean you need to have, unless you have it, this is my prediction. Treasury yields will rise until the economy falters. And I think it will in 2025. I think there's very high likelihood it will. So there's a self-governing aspect of these treasury yields. Prices fall, yields rise, it hurts the economy, and then you could get into a problem with the treasury market. You could have a Liz Truss moment like they did in England, rates spike, and then you could end up with a real disaster in the stock market, which would kill the spending in the top two quintiles that have been keeping the economy going, really the top quintile, top 20%. And then it could also hurt the housing market, which is really on tender hooks right now.
Yeah.
So that's the whole, when you put it all together right now, as an investor, I'm slightly long. I'm looking very closely at that treasury complex every day. Yields get anywhere near 5% on the benchmark, and I think it could be lights out for the stock market.
Well, here's a question for you. I think you agree with this, because it goes with your thesis, what you said. We can see, and this is kind of mind-blowing, but we can see interest rates continue to spike and even go above 5%. Yet stocks continue to climb because of the liquidity. No?
Because of the liquidity?
Well, yeah.
Well, okay. So you have the TGA, the Treasury General Account, which has about $700 billion, $800 billion in it. I backtested this pretty assiduously, so I wouldn't have a lot of quiescence in the TGA. It doesn't really. I mean, you could have market corrections when the TGA is coming down, it doesn't placate me very much. However, yes, that could be a source of liquidity, but you're going to eat up a lot of bank reserves once the reverse repo facility is gone. And like I just said, I think it's for all intents and purposes, it's gone. So bank reserves going into treasuries, not making loans. So I think there could be a lot of stress in the economy. And if that happens, you might see treasury yields. This is what I think could happen. Many scenarios, Andy, but interest rates continue to rise. They hit 5% on the benchmark. We're not that far away. You get a sell-off, a precipitous sell-off in the stock market and in the housing market, really a frozen housing market really starts to get panicky. Then you get a sharp decline in GDP growth. And then the stock market really tumbles because you're not getting anywhere near your 14% growth. No, nowhere close to it. Your earnings growth for the S&P 500 is low single digits at best. And that would send the market down significantly. I'd love to capitalize on that. It's not going to be easy to do, but it's really, really important and imperative for investors to avoid that 10, 20, 30% decline in stocks, which is very, very likely in 2025.
Okay. So two questions on that is the timing can be tricky. We're saying 25. And let's say I'm going to say, I really do see your argument. I see that would happen probably after March. And the reason we say that is because interest rates are, it's not immediate if interest rates spike and hit 5%. That's about, a 2 to 3 month lag. Correct me if I'm wrong.
I think if rates, well, yes.
Go ahead.
I think if rates spike over 5%, it depends on the rate of change, how fast they get there. If they gradually go to 5, maybe you have an argument. But if they go to 5 in a matter of a few weeks, you're going to have a real problem.
Yeah.
You're going to have a real problem in the stock market. I can pretty much, I don't want to guarantee anything, but the odds of the stock market
are really high.
Correcting, if rates go to 5% on the benchmark, what are we at now? 4.7,
we're really close.
Yeah. I mean, only 20 basis points away. But if it happens in the next week or so, then I think you'd have a real problem.
Now, in your opinion, where does gold fit in all of this?
I have a very small position, about 4%, in an inflation hedge, which does contain gold royalty companies, gold mining royalty companies. I was very long gold, 15, 20% at times last year. I rode that up nicely. For now, I am temporarily very unallocated to gold. And the reason is gold does not like rising nominal interest rates and doesn't like rising real interest rates, which is exactly what's happening right now. You also have a very strong dollar. You've got a lot of competition from Bitcoin. You have a president who just been elected, who's the Bitcoin czar. You know, he loves Bitcoin. He doesn't talk much about gold, but he wants the United States to be the epicenter of cryptocurrencies. So, I prefer he link the dollar to gold and not cryptocurrencies. But I don't. My druthers aren't really what's important here. The fact is that you have rising nominal rates, rising real interest rates, rising dollar, and a lot of competition from Bitcoin. So I am not negative gold, but I am out of it right now. But I think that's going to be short-lived, because once the economy starts to falter, it's going to really take off to new highs, in my opinion. So again, getting the timing right on the precious metals is very, very important.
Got it. How about just, and we'll end on this, just your overall outlook on economies, I guess, since... And I don't want to put words in my mouth, but you're very careful right now.
You're right.
Yeah, if we see any kind of contraction, that'd be very negative for commodities in general, correct?
If you see, first of all, I don't bunch commodities in one, monolithic group. So there's base metals, energy, and then there's precious metals. And some of them, sometimes they go together higher, and more often than not, they're separate.
Right.
Well, if you have, again, we have a total market cap of GDP that's 200%. If you look at the total market cap of equities as a percentage of the underlying economy, that is very, very high. And if you look at things like price to sales, CAPE ratio, if you look at equity risk premiums, this is an extremely expensive stock market, at least on the headline indices. Okay. Sure. So you're very vulnerable here to any kind of interest rate spike. So if you do get a stock market that falls due to spiking interest rates, which would also affect housing, and also, we didn't even touch on things like private credit, which is a multi-trillion dollar new industry that spawned out of nothing. And, there's one thing one thing about private credit is it's private. You can't, what are the prices? You don't know. What's the liquidity there? It's very limited. So what's the reaction to the top quintile of investors, which has kept the economy afloat? Because, you know, your portfolio of houses and your portfolio of equities has done very well. And your private credit looks pretty good too, at least you can assume on paper. What happens when those things go in reverse? And you can have a sharp drop in GDP, which would just, you know, be like a negative feedback loop for the stock market and for the economy.
Got it. So again, don't want to put words in your mouth, but investors in your mind need to be very careful right here. And
I am. I'm very cautious right now in everything. My portfolio right now is highly invested in Treasury T-bills and the shortest end of the yield curve. We do have some exposure to inflation. We do have some exposure to low volatility stocks. We do have some exposure to aerospace and defense. I think Pete Hegseth just said today that it's very dangerous for the United States to have spending on military below 3% of GDP. Very dangerous. He didn't say it was, you know, a good thing to cut defense spending. He's going to be very careful, and I think he should be, about what he spends and make sure we spend appropriately and not be wasteful, you know, wasteful in defense spending. But he does want to spend a lot more money on defense. And, you know, I think this world is getting more dangerous as well. So I have an investment in aerospace and defense too. So net long, about 15%. Comfortable with that for now, not predicting a big increase in stock prices, not predicting an imminent crash. But the odds are, as we go through the year and the liquidity becomes less and less, that we could enter a problem. And I'll reverse what you said. I think we can get a problem in this bond market. So bond prices fall and stock prices fall as yields go higher. That's what I think is a very, very likely possibility in Q2, Q3 timeframe.
Yeah, that's the nightmare scenario.
And you know what, Andy? For those holding the 60-40 portfolio, you know, 60 stocks, 40% bonds, your 40% sleeve is down about 50% since COVID.
Yeah.
If you go out long duration, that's hurt a lot of people. In 2022, it wiped out, you know, the stock market was down 22%, the S&P, but if you add bonds to it, it was a real disaster. That's what I'm most concerned about, because, you know, bonds aren't really cheap right now. You can't make an argument. So if you have 2% growth and 2% inflation, that's trend growth plus 2% inflation. And we're not at 2, but let's just say you get there. You get 4% and you get like a few 50 basis points in earnings above that inflation and nominal growth above inflation and real growth. You get 4.5. I mean, that would be a good, I guess that's the bottom. But what happens if inflation is higher like it is now?
Yeah.
So unless you... what I'm trying to say is, and this is the most important point, the only thing that in my mind can really bring quiescence to the bond market is faltering GDP growth, which would kind of bring people into the long end of the bond market curve. But it would be disastrous for those that expect 14% earnings growth, which is needed to support what the equity prices are. That's why it's just the risk. Here's the punchline here. The risk-reward ratio for being in a buy-and-hold 60-40 portfolio, the risk-reward ratio is extremely dangerous right now.
Well said. I completely agree with you. Michael, people, if they're fans of your work like I am and they want to do business with you, how do they do that?
So the website is pentoport.com. And there's two things you can do. If you have $50, you can get access to my midweek reality check, which gives you my views from a 36,000 foot level. And if you're a U.S. citizen and you have $100,000 to invest and you are, you meet our requirements, your suitability requirements, you can actually invest in the inflation, deflation, and economic cycle portfolio that looks at the most important thing, which is the second derivative, the rate of change of the rate of change of inflation in the context of economic growth. And I apply that output to a spectrum, a five-sector spectrum that ranges between deflation, where everything goes to a correlation of one and everything goes down, except cash and bonds and the dollar and shorts. Shorts tend to go up when the market goes down. And stagflation or intractable inflation, where you cannot short the market. It's very difficult to make money in intractable stagflation. You can in the right areas, but shorting the indices is very difficult. But you have to be long base metals and energy and precious metals so you can get a real return on your investments. So knowing where you are in that spectrum is crucial. Is it, 100% flawless? No, but it gives you an intelligent way to profit from bull markets and to protect and maybe profit from bear markets. And the downside here, Andy, is significant.
Thank you, Michael. I will put all of this in the show notes below this interview, as well as in the podcast on Apple and Spotify. I do appreciate your time. I always love you coming on. Thank you so much.
Thanks for inviting me, Andy.
Thank you.